Special. Hello, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed the build and analyze theme inspiration song there.
Even remember the build and analyze theme song.
I actually never heard the theme song because, like, I would do the show with Dan, and then he would edit it in afterwards. I liked the song "Funky Bitch" by, it's not by Fish, it's a Sun Seals song that Fish frequently covers. And I had said, like, oh, like, this is kind of what I'm listening to right now. Like, maybe we could do something like this. And I believe Dan just had somebody just basically rip it off, like, completely.
Cool.
So this song that was Sun Seals that then Fish covers is now covered by somebody that Dan paid to just directly play that song. But I've actually only heard it, I think, once ever, because, like, he would just throw it on there and, you know, go.
I listened to every episode of Build and Analyze. I have no idea what the theme song is you're talking about. It was that memorable to me.
Yeah. Anyway.
I agree.
All right. I have solved Apple's TV naming problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can't talk about this now. That's part of the actual show.
We're going to talk about it now. Because honestly, I don't think we're going to get to it. And this is probably all it deserves. But I have found...
We're going to get to it. I spent too much time on it for it to get to it. We got quotes from Eddie Q. We'll get to it. If not this show, then next show.
All right. I'll have to save my idea for another time then.
Yeah.
Oh, burn.
I mean, save it for when we cover the topic.
It's not that good of an idea.
Well.
It's good enough for a pre-show. It's not good enough for the actual show.
No, it's good enough for both of them, Marco.
It's not. It's really
whatever,
not. You'll
whatever
see.
We say is good enough. Anyway. Well, then we still need a pre-show.
I think we just
had
it.
That's it.
That's the pre-show. All right, let's do some follow-up. You get what you pay for? Question mark? No, I don't know. Let's do some follow-up. Apparently, the Scots are still perturbed. Adam One writes, I could hear every Scotsman in the world screaming in pain when you said English is the native language of Scotland. I am afraid my cousins over the pond are swearing oaths right now. It is true that English is the practical language in Scotland's largest cities, but you don't have to go far out of the cities before the traditional and historic language of the Scots begins to creep into communication. Scottish Gaelic, the true language. True language of the Scotsman. Man, I'm getting tongue-tied. Oh, my word.
Wow.
Just leave it all in. It's fine.
Getting
we're doing
tongue-tied over here.
Tongue-tied. Is still spoken in the Highlands and the rural areas of the West. And even where English is more common, many English speakers might not be able to understand much of what is said. The practical tongue is often a creole of English and Gaelic. Quick aside, I didn't realize that Creole had a lowercase version. I only knew of the uppercase Creole from the Louisiana area. So I learned something today. Anyways, going back to what Adam said, all that said, regardless of where you go, no Scotsman would ever identify themselves as English in any way. Additionally, Justin Monroe Merrington writes, there are three official languages in Scotland. Scots, a Germanic language spoken in the lowlands, which split off from Middle English around 600 AD. English, or Scottish English, which is a dialect that borrows quite a few words from Scots, confusing lots of people who don't realize Scots is a language, and Gaelic, the Celtic language. Most commonly spoken in the Western Highlands and Isles.
So there you go. I knew it wasn't right. I stopped myself in mid-sentence, but I didn't, when I talked about it, but I didn't know what the actual answer was, so now we do.
Now we do. Coming back to Recognition Corner, Christian Healer writes, I'm a hiring manager and we are hiring for a technical consulting role. I joined a Zoom call with a candidate who was wearing a black ATP polo shirt. First of all, excellent taste with the polo. I approve. We did the usual interview questions, but I asked him at the end, who is your favorite podcast host? After having a 5-minute ATP discussion, giving the correct answer, we offered a job same day, to which I replied privately to Christian, I am so glad that I got him a job, even though we all know the correct answer was probably John, but that's
well,
okay.
He left it a mystery. He didn't say what the correct answer was, but all I'm saying is ATP merch gets you jobs.
That's what I heard.
It's clearly, exactly.
That's what I heard. You heard it here first.
That he didn't say in the email who, you know, what was mm-hmm. the correct answer.
And then
love
we all
that.
Just get to think it's us. It's right. Perfect.
It's definitely movie. Not me.
I don't know. It might be.
It's definitely
it
not.
Well, no, it very well could be.
No, but the right answer is Casey.
Well, I appreciate that, but I don't know. Anyways, all right. So iPadOS 26.1 slide over. Daniel Luzluz correctly guessed that John somehow had reduced transparency turned on, causing the lack of sliding animation in slide over.
Correction. Why would reduce motion?
I had what
there we go. my bad. My bad.
What did I just say?
I typed transparency.
Oh, well, it made sense to me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyway, so this is the story behind this. I'm well aware that when you have reduced motion on, it changes animations into crossfades. Because if you remember way back in the iOS 7 days, I turned on reduced motion because I didn't like how stuff moved in iOS 7. And then I got to witness the crossfades everywhere. That's how they handled it. And remember the whole debate we had? You probably don't, but about like, well, if you turn off reduced motion, then you don't get to see the laser effects and messages. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes, I do remember this.
And then Apple added an update later that said, okay, even if you have reduced motion on, you can still choose to see the message effects. Because I wanted to see the message effects, but I didn't want to see the motion, and they had an option for it and blah, blah, blah. So that's why I had reduced motion on way back in whatever this was, like iOS 7 days. But years ago, for a long time now, I gave up on that, and I just turned reduced motion off, and I'm just taking the defaults. Maybe they changed the animations, maybe I just got used to it, but whatever, I did that. So even though I knew reduced motion had crossfades, and even though I was saying slide over is doing crossfade instead of a slide over, it didn't make any sense to me, I didn't connect the dots there. And I almost replied to Daniel and said, no, I don't have reduced motion on, it turns that off years ago, right? But I checked. I went to the iPad and checked, and sure enough, on my iPad, reduced motion was on. And then I'm like, okay, but if you're on iOS 18 and you have reduced motion on, does slide over slide? And the answer is yes, it still slides in iOS 18. But in iPadOS 18, in iPadOS 26, if you have reduced motion on, slide over does half a slide and then crossfades into its final position. So that part of my complaint about iPadOS and slide over is basically invalid, although I think what they do with reduced motion is dumb. But here's the other thing: the screen flicker and flashing also only happens when you have reduced motion on. If you turn reduced motion off, which I did now on my iPad, slide over slides normally, and it does not cause the entire screen to flash and flicker when you slide in and slide out. So I'm a little bit happier than I was. Thank you, Daniel, for making me double check that setting. But Apple really needs to work on their reduced motion thing, because it is just untenable. I think that the half animation and crossfade is ugly, but the flashing is just too much, especially if it's like, you know, you're in dark mode or it's dark in the room or whatever.
We are now returning to Case Corner, where Oliver Thomas writes, Ryan London now has an open bottom iPhone 17 Pro case with sapphire camera control buttons. This sounds like exactly what the doctor ordered for John Siracusa. What do you think, John?
I mean, I don't have this phone, so I don't care.
I know.
But Marco was saying that he liked the bullstrap case, but didn't like the bra thing on it. And the Ryan London one has a smooth leather surround, like it doesn't have like a big ridge or a wall or a metal ring. But it does show the whole plateau. So I was bringing this to Marco's attention in case he wants to try one more case. This is basically the bull strap case, but with a little R on the side instead of a bull on the back, and the whole plateau exposed.
Yep. So I ordered it. We'll see whenever it gets. The only thing is, like, from the photos, it looks kind of like the buttons suck. Like, those are not good-looking buttons in those photos.
I agree. It looks exactly like... I would love to know, like, who makes all these cases. Because, like, for many years, Ryan London and Bullstrap have basically sold the same case with minor variations. Clearly, there's some manufacturers that are making all of these. And they've always, for the past couple of years, had this... Like, the buttons have kind of been like this, like, a blister where the buttons come out of. As opposed to what I would like, which is, like, the old Apple leather cases, where it's the opposite, where there's, like, a ditch that the buttons are in. So the buttons can be taller because the surface there above is inset. But anyway, I mean, it's not the end of the world, but it's definitely not the nicest buttons. But everything else about it, open bottom, black leather, smooth thing around the plateau and whole plateau exposed. Seems nice.
Yeah, it looks like it. If the buttons are okay, which is a big if for a leather case, but if the buttons are okay, then that could be really nice. Otherwise, I've been using the Pete Design case for the last week, solid, you know, all the way through, and it's been, again, what I said last week, it's really bulky, but if you can forgive the bulk of it, it is otherwise excellent in every other way, but it is bulky.
And speaking of Marco, let's talk about your USB Odyssey, because Data writes, John said that Laughing Man 11, the Reddit poster with details about USB and Thunderbolt cables, sounded kind of authoritative. he is, at least a little. Laughingman 11 is the Reddit account of Benson Leung, engineer on the Chrome OS kernel. His name is literally on some of the USB-C specifications. He gives lots of fantastic advice about USB-C on Reddit, and we'll also put in a link to his Wikipedia page, which gives a little of the history there. Short, if I recall correctly, was he got burned by some crummy USB-C cables and decided this cannot stand. I will talk and scream from the heavens about what's good and what's bad. And that's what he does. With regard to ZFS and the Drobo Dream, John, can you remind us, what is the Drobo Dream?
Drobo Dream is, if you're like a home user and not like buying for an enterprise and data centers and stuff like that, but you're just a regular person who wants to have a bunch of storage and a network attached storage device. And you don't want to have to buy hard drives in sets of like 20 or something. You just want to buy as much hard drive space as you can afford. And then later, when you run out of space, see what the next biggest hard drive you can afford, whatever is on the market, whatever is, you know, whatever, and just buy it and stick it in there and keep doing that. Expand your space by basically, you know, running it, you know, filling the space that you have, and then looking at your budget at the time and the technology at the time, and then just buying the biggest drive that you can afford that you think is good and sticking it in there and having your expansion grow, but also having whatever data redundancy you chose when you set up the storage array stay the same. So you're not just doing like a JBOD thing where it's just like, oh, yeah, sure, you can add a drive of any size, just add space, right? There's no redundancy there. If you lose one drive, you lose all the data on that drive. So whenever you set up your array, you're like, I set it up and I want to be able to withstand one drive failure. I want to be able to withstand two drive failure. I want to be able to withstand 50% of my drives to fail. Whatever redundancy you decide is appropriate for your array, you set that on day one, and then over the years, you just buy the next biggest drive and stick it in, buy the next biggest drive and stick it in, or replace a smaller drive with a bigger one. And, you know, that's the Drobo Dream. It is a dream of home users who want to be economical as they expand their storage while still benefiting from redundancy.
So with that in mind, Joe writes, there have recently been some developments in the OpenZFS world with regard to the Drobo Dream called ZFS AnyRAID. While it is more complicated than I'm able to quickly summarize, essentially ZFS AnyRAID breaks down all the disks across the ZFS RAID array into 64 gig tiles and then runs its parity calculations on these tiles rather than across entire blocks as in traditional ZFS RAID. What this means is that in the future, a ZFS AnyRAID deployment will be able to handle disks of varying sizes in a much better and consumer-friendlier way. While this is being developed by Hex OS, they have committed to open sourcing it when it is finally released.
Yeah, so this is an in-progress thing. Again, ZFS's various RAID schemes are more flexible than they used to be, but they're not. They don't achieve the Drobo Dream. The Drobo Dream is called that because Drobo sold a while ago a hardware product that did purported to do what I just described, and more or less did it with some reliability issues. And I believe they're gone now. They're totally out of business, I think.
Yes, as far as
somebody right. buy their assets or something. Anyway, ZFS AnyRAID sounds promising, but it's still in development, so keep your eye out for that.
Cool. All right. I think we're good on follow-up. So we had some breaking news earlier today, and I appreciate that Apple at least did it before we recorded, even though I would have preferred yesterday, but it's fine.
Better than tomorrow.
Better than tomorrow.
I don't know. I mean, it was the holiday, right? Isn't that why it's on? Because they usually do an announcement on Tuesdays, but it was like Indigenous People's Day on Monday, so that everything gets shifted, like your garbage pickup.
Are you trying to say your opinions about this?
Again, for new listeners to the show, we intentionally record on Wednesday because Apple used to announce products on Tuesdays, and then we would be able to like record the show right after they announced them.
That
but
is
sometimes,
not why we picked Wednesdays. We happened to pick Wednesday, and that happened to work out pretty well.
No, that's why we picked it.
No, it is not. That is, you are, what is the reverse?
Maybe it was only in my head, but that it was definitely in my head. And I've said it before on the show, so it's not like the first time you two are hearing this, and last time you didn't object to it, but FYI,
no, I'm pretty sure the reason was like when we decided to do the show, we're like, hey, when can you record? How about this Wednesday? Yeah, okay. And then it just stuck.
No, I'm pretty sure.
I think there was more thought than that. It was basically, what day do we want to do this? And I thought we landed on Wednesdays being, well, it's the middle of the week.
I'm pretty sure. I wish we had this recorded. Maybe we even do. Someday I'm going to run transcription of all our recordings. I'm pretty sure the three of us discussed the fact that Apple usually announces on Tuesday, so Wednesday is good. And I'm even more sure that I have said this idea on the show before and neither of you objected. But anyway, suffice it to say, regardless of all of that, it was in my head when we picked Wednesday, whether it was voiced or not, but it totally was voiced.
Well, but hold on. We had this schedule for neutral, and we weren't figuring about Apple's, like,
I don't even remember when I recorded neutral.
It was Wednesday nights, I thought.
I don't know.
You think
I'm
I
not going to trust your memory of that,
exactly.
though.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let me see. Can I look? All right, I can find this out now, real time.
We're going to figure this out.
I'm going to go find a neutral recording file. When were we recording neutral? Let's see.
It was January of 13.
These are incomparables.
Marco is going to edit this out with aggression.
Yeah. What year was neutral?
2013. January 2013.
2012. I got to scroll.
I don't have the old project files. I just have the MP3s.
Neutral was on. All right. Here's a neutral recording on April 10th, 2013. What day was that?
Cal 4, 2013. The 10th was a Wednesday. What now? What now? Vindication, baby. Vindication.
I mean, obviously, we didn't pick neutral based on the day Apple releases.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But we did, when we were choosing the day to record ATP.
It was because we were already recording on Wednesday.
Right, exactly. You are definitely inventing some headcanon here, John.
I'm inventing it. This was it. This was definitely in my head. If I'd never spoke it to you, that's on me, but I'm pretty sure we had this discussion. I'm pretty sure the three of us had the discussion. We're like, yeah, it's a good idea because they release things on Wednesday. And I'm even more sure that I said on one of our shows or maybe a member special or whatever that the reason we do on Wednesday is Apple announces on Tuesday. And neither of you objected, and that was recent. It was probably like a making a show or something.
As Chloe Tart says in the chat, revisionist self-historian. I'm here for it. All right. Well, it's too bad that the released episode isn't going to have any of that because I know that Marco's going to cut all that out.
No, that's staying in.
All right, we'll see.
Because it's us, right, so we're probably right.
Well, now I mean, you're going to get the follow up from the people who have better transcription search than me finding the last time I mentioned that, and neither of you objected.
I mean, just because we didn't object then doesn't mean we agreed necessarily.
Well,
we just didn't want to get in an argument.
It was in my head. This is what I was thinking about Wednesday.
When we were recording neutral.
It is a benefit that we enjoy by recording on Wednesday, but I do not believe it was the reason. I believe it just happened to us, and we are thankful for that over time.
Right, just like a white car. It can happen to anybody.
Yeah, neither of you remember the discussion of like, yeah, we should stick to Wednesday because Apple usually announces stuff on Tuesday.
That's the whole, but stick to Wednesday is different because we were already there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that we had to move. Even if we were already recording neutral, I'm saying the reason we chose Wednesday as in let's not change from Wednesday was because Apple announced the stuff on Tuesday. Now you're saying, yeah, I remember that, but we didn't change days, so it doesn't count?
God, I'm dying.
But I'm saying we didn't choose Wednesday with that in mind. We chose Wednesday for
We chose to stay with Wednesday with that in mind.
Because we were already there. Already
right, I mean,
we could have moved it to any other day.
We could have, but why would we? We already had all the
momentum. Well, the reason we didn't was because we discussed it and said, well, this is actually a good day because Apple announces stuff on Tuesday and we'll be able to record right after they announce stuff.
But that doesn't mean we chose it.
This is just semantics. I feel like you're just saying that you agree with me, but you have some hair-splitting semantic thing. Well, technically, we didn't choose it because it was already there. We just didn't change it.
Yes, that matters.
I think that is hair-splitting.
And you don't remember this conversation where we said, well, we should use Wednesday because Tuesday is when Apple announces stuff? Or are you saying you remember that now?
I mean, I think we've talked about that multiple times over time, but it was never in the context of what day should we record them. It was always
earlier in the segment is the reason we record on Wednesday.
Which I disagree with this.
I didn't say the reason we chose Wednesday in the very beginning for the first time we recorded it. The reason we chose not to change from Wednesday was because.
I agree
with
nothing.
It was definitely that, and not that we had had 3 months of momentum, and why would we mess with the system?
I mean, there wasn't really much momentum from neutral.
That's true.
I mean,
here's the other thing. Some of the original ATPs were literally recorded after neutral, Accidental Tech Podcast. They were recorded at the same time.
Yes, on Wednesday.
Yes.
That's the whole
all right, sure,
point.
Sure. But by that point, we didn't know it was a podcast, so we weren't choosing a day for a podcast that we're recording about Apple. Obviously,
John, I love you so much, but this is retconning to the extreme.
It's not retconning. You both agree that that's why we record on Wednesday. You just
you know
don't think it was
right
chosen.
Now? You know what you're doing right now is I've told this story somewhere, probably this show. Just bear with me here. Long time ago, Declan and I would go to lunch every Sunday, and I would take him to a different barbecue place, not the one that Marco went to. And one time I was like, you know what, Declan, would you like to try a French fry? And I thought, oh, this will be the one time. And so I let him try a French fry. And of course, he's like, wow, that's delicious. And then every time we went to the barbecue place, he thought he would have a French fry. So because I agreed once, he thought forevermore that was a fact. Because we didn't argue with you once about the
comparison. But it is a fact.
Wednesdays.
We do record on Wednesday because that's when Apple releases things on Tuesdays. And also, you told the story about the French fry before on the show, which I remember.
I've told it at least a couple times. I remembered having told it at some point, but I'm not trying to say that my memory is as good as yours. I will say, however, that the two of us agree that you are retconning. Anyway.
No, I'm not retconning. You both remember the conversation. You're just debating whether that conversation constitutes the thing I was describing. You're saying, no, it doesn't. But none of you are saying we never had that conversation or never had this thought before, right?
We had a conversation about, wow, it is kind of nice that we record on Wednesday.
Right, exactly. Okay, so Marco agrees. Casey, do you agree with that?
I think it was circumstantial. Yeah. Like, we are already here. We are going to be...
Casey doesn't remember the conversation, which is not surprising. Marco does remember the conversation, but thinks it doesn't count or doesn't constitute what I was referring to.
I definitely agree.
But I'm totally willing to declare victory based on Marco's memory of the conversation, because that's what I'm talking about, that we had that conversation and said, yes, this is a thing that is a factor in the Wednesday-ness of the show.
All three of us are declaring victory on conflicting goals.
Only that person's favorite host should declare victory.
now the truth comes out and John is feeling real confident.
I'm not saying who it is. All three of us. See, could be any one of us.
I love doing this show so much. I really, truly do. Even when you two drive me bananas, which is often.
We have so much stuff to get through in this show.
Well, you shouldn't have argued with us. It's all your fault. Anyway, the M5. The M5 has been announced today, and it's in a bunch of devices, which we'll talk about. But let's talk about the M5 first. It's built, this is reading from Apple, built using third generation 3-nanometer technology. M5 introduces a next generation 10-core GPU architecture with a neural accelerator in each core, enabling GPU-based AI workloads to run dramatically faster, with over 4 times the peak GPU compute performance compared to M4. The GPU also offers enhanced graphics capabilities and third generation ray tracing that combined delivered a graphics performance that is up to 45% higher than the M4. The M5 features the world's fastest performance core with up to a 10-core CPU made up of 6 efficiency cores and up to 4 performance cores.
Yeah,
you still don't know how to handle those JSs, huh?
Right. No, I thought this was your time to interject.
No, I'm going to explain it again. Second time.
Jesus.
When you see a thing in the show, you're reading a thing. This in the notes, it's like from some document. This is from Apple's press release, right? And then obviously you're reading from Apple's press release. Mm. If I want to interject with some point that is not from the text, I put JS in front of it. So you know this wasn't from the...
Right,
thing.
But I thought you were interjecting. That's the key.
But it's just, I'm just adding information. I'm saying that I added that information, but I don't need to say it.
All right.
This is the point where you can interject this as if this is your insight.
All right, well, you know what I knew? You know what I knew that JS did not know? I can't even say it with a straight face. What I knew and John didn't know or something like that is that that is the same performance and efficiency cores as the M4. Definitely something I came up with. Definitely. Yeah,
doesn't matter who knows it. I just wanted that information to get out there in case, hey, if you're wondering, 6 efficiency and 4 performance, is that a change from the M4? No, it's not.
All right. Yeah. Together
often,
they deliver.
To be fair, like oftentimes... The Apple press releases or statements in the keynotes will omit that information because it usually is not that impressive compared to the past generation. Or they'll say it's 75% faster than the M2. It's like, well, but that wasn't the previous chip. They'll do comparisons like that because they want to maximize how important the new chip sounds. And in a lot of specs, the M5 is actually really impressive over the M4. And in some specs, it's more of just kind of like an evolutionary, here's a nice little step.
And even when there's big changes with core counts and stuff, they don't really talk much about it. What would they do? Which was the Pro that had a really weird different number of cores?
Yeah, it was 6 and 6 instead of 6 and 4. It had way more efficiency cores than the base.
Yeah, and they tend not to emphasize that. But when we're talking about chips, it's one of the things we're interested in. Have they made different decisions about how to allocate the silicon space on whatever the chip is? But just FYI, the M5 doesn't make different decisions than the M4 did. In that area.
Reading from Apple, together they deliver up to 15% faster multi-threaded performance over M4. M5 also features an improved 16-core neural engine, a powerful media engine, and nearly 30% increase in unified memory bandwidth to 153 gigs per second. The Verge says, Apple.
Oh, you skipped it again.
Jesus.
When me and Marco were watching, we're like, fingers crossed. It's going to happen. It's going to work
this time. He got it.
This is a mess. When I said I love doing the show with you, I'm just going to put it in past tense now. I'm about to get fired. I've loved doing the show with you too. I will collect my belongings. I will not serve my 2 weeks. I will hold my head in shame.
We can't fire you. You're my favorite host.
All right. So one of us who's definitely not John Syracuse says the M4 was 120 gigs per second instead of 153 gigs in the M5. The Verge writes that Apple claims the M5 chip is 3.5 times faster at AI tasks than the M4.
Yeah, so this is actually following a very similar pattern from what we saw with the new iPhone Pro processor, where the graphics performance, and especially like with AI acceleration of certain things by GPUs, like it's a huge leap above the M4. The processor is, again, it's kind of just more of like an evolutionary. I mean, 15% multi-threaded performance over the M4 in 1 year is still really good. Like, when we think back to the Intel days, you were lucky to get like 5 to 10% with each new generation, which was not every year. They were usually longer than that. So for Apple to, in like the least exciting upgrade of the M5, which is the CPU cores, for those to be 15% faster, it doesn't sound like much because of what we're used to with the M chips, because they usually are like they keep leaping forward. And the M4 was in particular a substantial leap over the M3 in CPU performance. So it's impressive they were able to get 15% more. But the real story with the M5 is not the CPU. The real story with the M5 is the GPU cores.
Although Apple touts, I didn't put this quote in there, but Apple does tout that the power cores in the M5 are the most powerful power cores ever made, which is like, well, the only people who make a thing called power cores is you.
No, that's not true anymore. Intel now has, like...
I know. Like, everybody has the big and little cores, I'm not saying that Apple's the only company that makes some cores, more powerful than others, but, like, I think they might have capitalized the P, or, like, anyways, like, what does this even mean? Am I comparing the biggest compute core in your thing to the biggest compute core in any chip in the world?
The biggest PC core.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is, Apple is very proud of the power cores. Now, this is another piece of information that I'm pretty sure last time this came up that we weren't entirely sure, and I'm mostly sure. Remember, Mark, you asked, like, are they still doing the thing where the CPU cores in this are from last year's phone chip and not this year's phone chip?
Yeah, that's what we were speculating. But no, it seems like this is a direct, copy into the Mac world of what's in the new iPhone chip.
I don't think that's the case. I think these are the CPU cores, based on the CPU cores of last year's phone chip. Now, the phone chip doesn't have power cores of the same kind. I believe the power cores are always custom, but anyway, I would love for someone who knows whether or not are, because they used to do that. The M chips used to get the older cores than the phone chips. Obviously, this is getting the newest GPU, like Marco said. Like, that's the big headline story for the M5. It gets the GPU tech that they used in the current phones, which have those whatever neural accelerators. Every GPU core gives them a big boost. Like, that's clear. It has that. The question is, are these CPU cores, and someone's going to know, because they all have those code names of, like, I forget what they are, but like Ice
Tornado
Storm and this, whatever. Yeah, like, and then you can tell what they are. I we don't have this hardware, and I wouldn't know how to do that anyway. So if somebody out there knows, what CPU cores are the CPU cores in the M5 based on? Are they based on the A19 thing from our phones right now, or are they based on last year's phone? Please write in and let us know. But either way, like Marco said, the CPUs, even though they're not the story, Apple touts them because, hey, they are the fastest ever by a measurable amount. But really, the GPU is the big boost. And I didn't find any really big power numbers for this, but it seems like the power usage is, because one of the knocks on the N3P process that these are presumably using is that it didn't offer big power savings over the previous 3-nanometer process. So where are they getting, the extra power from, the extra extra computing performance from? Are they spending more power to do that? And based on the products that we're going to get to in a second, it doesn't look like the M5, the plain old M5, is particularly more power hungry than the plain old M4. So anyway, we'll see the benchmarks when they come out. But so far, the M5 is looking like what we thought it would. And if you care about GPU and AI performance, it's a nice little chip.
So the M5 Pro, M5 Max, and other chips, we are theorizing might have some different tech in it. So Ming-Chi Kuo wrote in December of 2024, the M5 Pro, Max, and Ultra will utilize server-grade SoIC packaging, system on integrated chips. Apple used 2.5D packaging called SoIC-MH, or molding horizontal, to improve production yields and thermal performance, featuring separate CPU and GPU designs. John, what does that mean in English?
Well, first thing it means is, hey, they released, as we'll see in a second, M5 MacBook Pro. Where are the MacBook Pros that have the M5 Pro and the M5 Max? They're not here. That was in the past couple weeks, the rumor has been they're going to release an M5 MacBook Pro, which they did, but not the one that has an M5 Pro and M5 Max. And why are those delayed and the M5 is not delayed? the rumor, theory, whatever, is that the M5 Pro and M5 Mac use this TSMC's SOIC technology, which we'll detail a little bit in a second. And that's newish, and they're having problems with the yield, or it's a little bit delayed, or whatever. That's why the more powerful M5-based MacBook Pros have been pushed off into early 2026. So that explains the staggered schedule. If the chips are ready, I think Apple would have launched them. If they're not, they'll be ready early next year. But yeah, that, again, this is not, you know, Apple's not going to comment on this, but that's been the theory for a while.
All right, so tell me about this SOIC thing, please.
Trying to make heads or tails of the language on TSMC's website to try and find an authoritative source for this. This is what they have to say. TSMC SOIC features ultra-high-density vertical stacking for high performance, low power, minimum resistance, inductance, and capacitance. It features heterogeneous integration of known good dies with different chip sizes, functionalities, and wafer node technologies. Boy, this is such business speak. Integrates both homogeneous and heterogeneous chiplets into a single SoC-like chip with a smaller footprint, thinner profile. This chip can be holistically integrated into... Here we go. COWOS, which is chip on wafer on substrate, or INFO, which is integrated fan-out package. From the outside, the integrated chip looks like an ordinary SoC, but on the inside, it is embedded with heterogeneously integrated functionalities. So here's my... And we'll link to the webpage. And you can see they have diagrams in the webpage that try to explain this, with a little diagram of what a plain SoC looks like and what an SOIC looks like in both the COWOS and INFO_POP, which is integrated fan-out package, of course.
How could it be anything else?
But, I mean, I swear that one of their acronyms, that their acronyms mix capital and lowercase letters to try to, you know, the OVs are lowercase O's, right? And the INFO, I guess the N is the N from integrated. And they use an underscore, but sometimes they use a hyphen. Anyway, not great nomenclature. But my understanding of technology before I looked all this stuff up was that this is something that would let Apple essentially fab the GPU part as its own little, you know, thing on the silicon wafer. And also fab, like, the other stuff as a separate thing. Because the bigger you make, like, your single unit thing that you're fabbing, the more chance you have errors and the lower your yields are, right? If you made one very tiny thing, chances of an error landing that are small. If you make one humongous thing, you know, there's going to be way more errors in there. So Apple's SoCs are very often, you know, or have been historically a single die that has the CPU, the GPU, the display driver, the storage driver, the neural engine, like everything is all on one die. That's one thing of silicon on the silicon wafer, and you cut it out as a little rectangle, and either everything on that rectangle works or some of it's broken or whatever, and the bigger you make that rectangle, the more expensive it gets because the yields go down. So my understanding before reading this was SOIC is going to let them make one rectangle for the GPU that's smaller than the whole SoC now, and one rectangle for the other stuff that's also smaller than the SoC now, so you have better yields on those individual things, but you'll be able to take those two things and combine them, squish them together vertically on top of each other so that they perform and behave as if they were one big rectangle, but they take up less room, and you get better yields because you don't have to fab the whole thing in one go and make sure it's all perfect. After reading this, I'm not sure if that's right anymore, because they explained it in such, you know, with such language that with terms that I'm, you know, probably terms of art that I'm not familiar with, but also big long words in business speak. And even look at their diagrams, like look at the COWOS SOIC one. It's like SOC one, SOC two, SOC three are all on top of each other, and then the memory is next to it. This is like the Mac ones. The Mac ones have the high bandwidth memory like next to the SOC, and then I think the InfoPop ones, the integrated fan-out package on package, I think that's what like the phones are like, where the RAM is on top of them. But either way, I see three small SoCs, like three small dies combining to make one thing, whereas the old way was one die for SoC. So maybe I'm right. I don't know. Anyway, we'll find out when Apple releases the M5 Pro and the M5 Max if they use this new technology. If they do, it should let Apple essentially make them more cheaply and have fewer ones that have binned parts in them. Especially, yeah, Here we go again. Especially if they were ever to make a really big, really powerful chip that would be prohibitively expensive to do as a single chip on the die.
You know, why would they ever do that? Who would want
some
that?
Huge,
what kind of
giant
professional
chip
Mac
huge,
would that be used for?
With a huge number of cores? It's so hard to fab one giant chip like that and have everything work on it, but what if you could fab just the GPU part simply from the CPU part and double your yields because now you're having... Just a fantasy, I'm sure.
It's just a fantasy, baby. All right, let's talk M5 MacBook Pro, because we did get one of them at least. The M5, this is only the M5, not M5 Pro, not M5 Max, certainly not M5 Ultra or anything like that. The case appears to be about the same as far as I can tell. The M5 itself, again, 10-core CPU, for performance, 6 efficiency, 10-core GPU as well. There are currently no binned versions as far as we can tell. Apple has said it's a breakthrough for M1 and Intel-based upgraders. Interesting.
Yeah, see, they've moved the window. Like, what we've seen is that, like, you know, ever since the M-series chips came out, 5 years ago now, they've been, you know, very aggressively touting, like, look at how much faster it is than Intel and our Intel-based, you know, Macs that came before us. And then, you know, over the 5 years since the M1 was released, they kept comparing everything to Intel. And they kept saying, like, you know, here's the new brand new M2. It's this much faster than Intel. Here's the brand new M3. It's this much faster than Intel. And they kept going. And, you know, we've all assumed, like, this is basically, like, they're trying to get upgraders. They're trying to, like, recognize that people keep laptops for a pretty long time these days. And they're trying to say, hey, if you're still using this old Intel piece of crap, you know, upgrade to our awesome, shiny new M chips.
And by the way, they were right. This is not BS. Like, if you were still using an Intel Mac and they're trying, you, like, I know it's hard because everyone else.
I know, John, who would still
great,
be using an right? Intel Mac?
Yeah,
today?
I know. But, like, I know it's the silliest of me doing it, but, like, but if you had, like, an Intel iMac and you think, honestly, how much better is, like, an M2 iMac going to be than my Intel one? A lot. A huge amount that you will notice. So anyway, I understand. It got ridiculous because it's like, okay, even if you weren't comparing to Intel, comparing to, like, a 4-year-old CPU, well, you better be faster. But that was their message. But yeah, their message has now shifted.
Yeah, this is the first time they're using that kind of, like, reaching far back upgrade relativism to apply to an M chip, because the M1, even though it was incredibly awesome, it was 5 years ago. And the M chips, as I said earlier, like, they get substantially better each iteration. So we're now up to M5. It's really fast, even compared to M1. And it does seem ridiculous to still compare it to Intel now at this point. So now they're finally saying, hey, if you've been holding on to that ancient M1 that we... Aren't they still selling it at Walmart? Is that still for sale?
But here's the problem with this comparison. The M1 is actually still pretty good for a lot of things. Like, it's not, if you have some fanless M1 MacBook Air that you're still using, like, if it still works, it's probably fine. And that's a problem for Apple. They're like, you know, if you make really good computing products, they last longer. And Apple wants you to eventually buy a new one, you know?
Right.
But the M1 is just so much, there was such a leap from the Intel, especially for things like laptops, like, or like fanless laptops. Like, the fanless M1 MacBook Air compared to the Intel MacBook Air that was before it, it's just such a night and day difference. And I have an M1 MacBook Air on my desk here, and it's still fine. But anyway, they're
that's
touting
still
here,
the one
know.
That that's the one they're still selling at Walmart.
I know, but
you're right.
Still,
like,
pretty good.
Like, if you have, like, a higher end one, you know, you have things like fans. You know, you have larger dies. Like, you know, the you know, big, more heat is going through that kind of enclosure, and so, like, the idea, like, it might. Those tend to die earlier than the lower end ones. Like, the lower end, the simpler, the less powerful, the less hot your machine is, the more likely it is generally to last longer, especially if there's no moving parts, like no fans. So those M1 MacBook Airs, there's probably a lot of them still kicking. Like, you know, they're going to start having problems. You know, the batteries are going to wear out. They'll start having, like, keyboard problems, like, you know, just from age. Like, you know, so the reality is the M1 is, you know, pretty old at this point, even though it was so awesome and still is, you know, awfully good compared to what a lot of things can do now. But the reality is they've come a long way, and the modern M chips are so much faster that they're now saying, listen, even if you came along with us 5 years ago with the M1 and got that big leap, now there's another big leap next time you upgrade. And hey, why don't you do it now? And they're not wrong. Like, you know, if you would use that performance, or if you need the upgrade, it is a massive upgrade from where we were back then.
the compounding a couple percent each year or whatever on everything adds up to this copy in their marketing.
And it's not a couple percent each year. It's like 20%. It's a lot.
It depends. But anyway, M1 upgraders will experience up to 6 times faster AI performance, up to 6.8 times faster GPU performance with ray tracing, and up to 2 times faster CPU performance. Now, the ray tracing, obviously there was no ray tracing hardware in the old ones than there is now, so that feels kind of unfair or whatever, and who will even use that? But the CPU one, they've doubled it. Like, the M5 is basically twice as fast in CPU as the M1. So between M1 and M5, they doubled. That's pretty darn good. That is a good compounding of gains over years. I still think the M1 is pretty good, but that's the curse of making a really good product is it's harder to top yourself.
Yep, and your AI will run a little bit faster as you load ChatGPT.com in your web browser on each machine. You'll see, wow, this loads in Safari or Chrome a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
6 times faster. Is that what they mean by AI performance? Probably not.
All right, so breaking down the different options, that you can have 16, 24, or 32 gigs of RAM. You can have half terabyte through 4 terabytes. That is less than the bigger models that are currently available. And additionally, you can get up to 2 times faster SSD performance than the prior generation. Well, that's cool.
You'll see that claim in basically all the M5-based products. I'm not sure what it's based on. I saw one thing that said it's based on them using a newer storage technology or newer storage standard. So we'll find out when people benchmark these. But that is one of the claims. M5, you get 2 times faster SSD performance than the M4.
Do you think when they say up to 2 times faster, do you think they mean only certain configurations or only
yeah,
certain
that's the question. Like, oh, do I need to get the 4 terabyte model to do that? Is it 1 versus 2 chip thing? Remember, they undid that. Like, they did that a while ago, and then they said, no, but they fixed it, and they said, no, everybody's going to get the good performance of the 2 chips. Do some of them have 4 chips? So we'll find this out when they start testing them. But that is the quote, up to 2 times faster SSD performance in these M5-based products.
They are offering the nanotexture display for $150.
Yes. Let me just say, I got the M4 version of this, like, you know, a year ago, whatever. It's so good.
No, stop. I don't want to hear this because I don't have it and I'm jealous.
The reason why is that nanotexture screen. If you actually, like, are taking your laptop around out in the world, I cannot more highly recommend the nanotexture screen. It's so incredibly good. So good, in fact, that it was one of the reasons why I upgraded from my M2 MacBook Air to this M4 14-inch MacBook Pro, and I will not go back for the screen alone. It is so useful if you're, like, on, you know, mass transit, like, you're sitting next to a window somewhere. Like, it's so good. Strongly recommend nanotexture.
A lot of people don't like the fingerprint difficulty. It's hard to get fingerprints on that screen. It's hard to get them off, even with the polishing cloth that comes with it.
I, for whatever it's worth, I have not found nanotexture to be harder to clean than the regular shiny screens have always been. Like, you know, when you get, like, that one slight row of keyboard imprint on it, you're like, uh-oh, I better, you know, catch up to that before it gets out of hand. You know, you get the microfiber, you get the spray, whatever it is. And, like, it's hard to clean, but so are all of their screens. Like, so, and as long as you are not, like, a monster constantly touching your screen, it's not going to look dirty.
Yeah, that's the problem with the nanotexture iPad, which we'll get to in a second, because you touch that one. So,
well, I believe, so do we have info? So, like, I believe with the iPad, didn't they, like, put the coating on the underside of the glass or something?
No, but three nanotexture screens they offer, the XDR, the MacBook Pro, and the iPad, I believe are 3 different.
I believe that's right.
Things that, yeah. I don't know if they're different technologies, but they're, if you look at the 3 of them under a microscope, I believe you could distinguish them. And so I think they did try to make the iPad one, I think it has, like, essentially a rougher texture, like bigger divots instead of tiny ones, and maybe that makes it easier to clean. But, you know, everything's relative. Like, I'm glad that I don't actually like the nanotexture one, but what Mark was talking about is, even if you don't like the nanotexture, even if you don't like how it looks, it does have advantages if you're in uncontrolled lighting situations, like on the go with your laptop, because sometimes the glare from the glossy ones, and, you know, if you can't control where you are, you're on a train and the light's coming in through the window, you just literally can't see your screen on a glossy screen, and there's nothing you can do about that, and the nanotexture helps there. So that, I understand the attraction to it, I just don't actually like how it looks.
The interfaces, you can get Wi-Fi 6E, or it still has, I guess I should say, Wi-Fi 6E. It's still Bluetooth 5.3, and it's still Thunderbolt 4, not Thunderbolt 5, interestingly.
Makes sense for the base M5. Like, I'm not kind of sure. The Wi-Fi 6E one annoys me, because, as we'll see in a little bit, because, you know, we know Apple has ways to get better Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, but not in the base M5 MacBook Pro.
Seems not. The power adapter, you get a 70-watt power adapter standard, unless you're in the EU, in which case you get nothing. Good day, sir. You can add the 96-watt power adapter for an additional $20. Building on what I was saying a moment ago from Mac Rumors, there's no power adapter in the box in European countries, including the UK, Ireland, Germany, Italy, France, Spain, the Netherlands, Norway, and others, according to Apple's online store. An Apple spokesperson told the French website Numerama, Nicolas Lelouch, let's go with that. I can't do French. I can barely do English. That the decision to not include a charger with this particular MacBook Pro is made in anticipation of a European regulation that will require Apple to provide customers with the option to purchase certain devices without a charger in the box starting in April. Apple does still include the USB safe to MagSafe 3 cable in the box, however.
Yeah, so you get the cable, you just don't get the thing that you plug the cable into. So you don't, you like the MagSafe cable, because these have MagSafe on them, so you need the cable that has that end to magnetize to the power port. Of course, you can just use the USB-C port as well, but anyway, that's it would have been nice if Apple gave an option to get the charging thing, but they don't. You just don't get
it. They do. The option is you can pay for it.
I guess, but yeah. to have it in the box or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's I understand, you know, Apple's kind of, I know they're no fan of the EU regulation,
exactly.
But
seriously.
But you know, they, instead of cutting the price by, you know, £30 or whatever, they just said, "Oh, fine, okay, we'll just make it optional." So It's effectively a price raise. Like that's what
passing
this means.
The savings on to you is not a phrase that's in Apple's vocabulary.
Oh, definitely not.
Certainly not, indeed. All right, the colors, prepare yourselves. This is a really shocking development from Apple. The colors are as follows: silver and space black.
Yeah, no change there. It's a MacBook Pro. We know what that means. That means they will occasionally, about every 5 years, design a new shade of black for you. And otherwise, that's it. You can get black, lighter black, or silver. And
just wait.
No longer lighter black anymore either.
The OLED ones that are coming in 2027 will come in Cosmic Orange, and you'll love it.
That'll be amazing. I would upgrade just for that.
I think that would be a little bit too much orange for my taste, but, you know,
no,
I would approve
thing.
Of it being a thing.
I use orange. Like, so my desktop Mac, I just use, like, the regular Mac multicolor color scheme. On my to-go Mac with this nanotexture screen, I use orange as the system accent color. just for, like, some fun.
So every
some
app
variety.
Feels like Overcast?
Yeah, it's really fun, actually. Like, I've never used the accent color in any other Macs before, but I'm like, you know, for this one, it's because it's like a different computer, it's a different size, I use a different wallpaper on it, I have a few different settings on it, and I auto-hide the dock on that one, but not on my desktop because the monitor's huge. And so that's the one. I'm like, let me also, you know, make this accent color orange. And that one has Tahoe, and my desktop still does not. So it's kind of fun to have, like, this all-new experience whenever I'm on the go. It's nice.
Do you remember the original iMacs that came with those themes? Or They would come with, like, you could change the accent color. Obviously, it was just part of classic macOS, but also they came with desktop backgrounds to match those. Remember, it was, like, the flying saucers? This may have been before your time, but Apple has done this where they kind of do it with the current iMacs, where they will, everything is themed, including the software part of it. It's fun if you've never done that, but the theme ability of macOS has really gone downhill over the years.
That's too bad. The price is starting at $1,600. You can pre-order it as we speak. It'll be in stores on October 22nd, which interestingly is a Wednesday. It's not a Friday as it often is. It's a Wednesday.
Let me, before we leave the subject of this base model MacBook Pro 14-inch, let me just also say that, you know, when I got this, you know, I was trying to choose, like, should I get, like, a super fast one, like an M4 Pro or Max, and decided to just get the base M4, in large part because the M4 is really fast, and it actually, if you look at the M4 Pro and Max for CPU, it doesn't actually scale up that well. It's much more of a GPU beast as you scale it up, but CPU does not actually scale amazingly linearly with those core counts. And it's so, like, the base is so good. The base M4 is so good. And you get amazing battery life for it. You get all of the other benefits of the Pro. You get, like, you know, the nicer screen, the nicer speakers, the nicer microphones. You get, like, all the ports. You get the SD cards. Like, it's an amazing overall machine, but you still, but you have a lower price. You have better battery life. Like, it's a great overall combo. This new M5 14-inch MacBook Pro looks to basically be the identical machine with the M5 instead. Like, everything else looks basically the same. And I can strongly recommend this machine overall. We haven't yet seen the, you know, as discussed earlier, we haven't yet seen what the M5 Pro and Max chips will be, or whatever their equivalents are. We haven't seen that yet. And maybe they'll be amazing performance monsters, probably. But if you don't necessarily think you need that, or if you're coming from, like, if you compare the performance of the M4 and M5 base models to, like, the M2 Max or the M3 Max, it compares very well, surprisingly, because it was such a leap.
I think, what's his name? What's Lucas M something? Who's the YouTuber that I'm thinking of? He's got, like, an
I know who you're thinking of. I can't remember his name.
Anyway, I think he did a video just today where he was benchmarking the base, just the plain old M5 versus an M4 Pro, and the M5 beat it in almost everything.
Yeah, like it's really
so that's
quite
not two generations
chip.
Old. That's the plain M5 beating the previous generation M4 Pro. So that is
And those destroy anything from the M1 through 3 generations, which themselves were very fast. So, like, what I'm saying is this machine could be right for you. Like, this machine is right for a lot of people. It has been amazingly right for me as my on-the-go machine, and it's fast enough that if I needed it to be, it could be my only machine. It's that good. And so the M5 version makes that even better, especially on the GPU side, but, you know, it's even better. So this is a solid all-arounder, and if you are in need of something anywhere close to this combination, I would strongly recommend checking it out. And if you ever work in the sun, get the nanotexture.
This is the last hurrah of this design, too, probably, because everyone expects when the OLED ones come, which is going to be the M6 ones, most likely, that they'll redesign the case, right? So if you like this case, this was the last best one to get with this case design, or this generation, or the M5 generation. Maybe the M6, obviously the OLED will be amazing, and that'll be very attractive, and you might want to wait for that model. But if you don't care about OLED, and you're worried that you're not going to like whatever they do to the design in the next one, it's another possible reason to get, like, the last one of this generation before they have generational turnover.
Off the top of your head, do you folks remember what is the display limitations for the vanilla versus Pro versus Max chips? Because I remember early on, mm-hmm. you had to have, like, the Pro or the Max to have more than a couple displays. Do you happen to remember offhand where that is now?
They fixed that in the M3 or M4 generation.
Well, that's why I was asking. So it's
I didn't put the display specs in here. I didn't have time to look that up, but I would imagine it's the same as the M4. But I think it's two external displays for this one. We can look it up.
I tried to look it up quickly using the compare thing on the app on the store, and I couldn't get a clear answer quickly as we recorded. But I was thinking, you know, what drives me to a Max? I currently have an M3 Max. If I were to go tomorrow, could I just get a vanilla M5? And the things that I was thinking about was I have an 8-terabyte drive for reasons that I stand by, but I'm not interested in litigating right now. And I think that might require either a Pro or a Max. I use three external displays, and that used to require a Pro or a Max.
It still does. This one says on Apple's MacBook, M5 MacBook Pro says it's up to two external displays with 6K resolution at 60 hertz.
Okay,
There's no three displays connecting to this.
Okay, so then that would need either a Pro or a Max.
Well, it says, or one external display at 6K resolution over Thunderbolt and one external with HDMI, so that's still just two.
Yeah, if they're not all Thunderbolt, I believe you get some bonuses here and there, because the HDMI does count as one of the outputs. But yeah, generally speaking, what you're looking at is, like, if you need a lot of RAM or a lot of storage or a lot of GPU power or a lot of monitors. Like, that's...
Oh, That's something I forgot to mention before. I should have put it in the notes. The SOIC thing for the supposed M5 Pro and M5 Max.
Soik.
One of the other... I mean, I don't think this is true, but before things are announced, people can have their hopes and fantasies. And one of the hopes and fantasies is that if you make the M5 Pro and M5 Max out of a bunch of individually made dies and combine them into one big SOC, in theory, I don't... really buy this, but in theory, it would allow Apple to divorce the beefiness of the CPU from the beefiness of the GPU because they can mix and match. In practice, I don't think Apple would do that, and B, I'm not sure how much flexibility there is because the way they get connected together seems very intimate and regimented, because it's not like someone joked in the ring thing, like, imagine if they had the GPU on a separate card from the CPU, like in the old days when they were separated. The whole point of Apple's architecture is like they're so close to each other or are on the same die because there are performance benefits. So this SOIC thing is not like, oh, just have separate CPU and GPU again. They're literally on top of each other. They're touching each other. So they're trying to get all the performance, power, latency, so on and so forth, benefits of having an all-in-one die while still being able to fab them separately. I don't think Apple will mix and match because someone's like, oh, I want a really big GPU, but I don't need this friggin', you know, 28-core CPU. Can I get a smaller core count on the CPU but the biggest GPU? And you can now fantasize that that will be possible with this SOIC thing. I just don't think Apple will do it, but there's that.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they will either, but you never know. Weirder things have happened. All right, then they also announced the M5 iPad Pro. This is going to be a little bit interesting. So models with less than 1 terabyte of storage get a 9-core CPU, 3 performance, which is down 1 from the M5 MacBook Pro, and 6 efficiency. They get 12 gigs of RAM. Models with 1 terabyte or 2 terabytes of storage get a 10-core CPU with 4 performance, 6 efficiency, like the M5 MacBook Pro, and 16 gigs of RAM. And all of the models share a 10-core GPU.
I was trying to figure out also, again, under time constraints, the fact that there's no binned M5 for the MacBook Pro, because we just read this binned based on storage, which is so weird, but whatever. They've been doing it this way on the iPad Pro. If you get less storage, you get a binned M5 on the iPad Pro. But no matter what M5 MacBook Pro you get, they're all the cores work on all of them. Did they do that with the M4 as well?
Yes. M4, so when you get to the MacBook Pro family, the base model M chip is considered the lowest end option, and so they give you like the best one of those, whenever they inevitably release like an M5 MacBook Air, for instance, there will be almost certainly binned base M5s in the low end configuration of the MacBook Air. But once you get to the Pro, it was always like, all right, the base M chip, this is always the best version of that.
Then you can get binned M4 Pros and binned M4 Maxes.
You can still today buy binned M4 Pros. The Maxes, do they bin those too? I think they do this time.
I think they do. Again, because the bigger you make the chip, the more likely there's going to be some flaw somewhere and they want to be able to make money of those, so they'll sell the binned ones.
Exactly. And like, to actually get this, you know, part of what I'm saying about, like, if you don't need like massive GPU performance, when you look at the CPU performance of like the base M4 and compare it to the M4 Pro, especially like the binned M4 Pros that you get for going like a few $100 up, you're actually not having that big of a gain. And then to get the full cores of the Pro chip, it's like $800 more than the cost of the base chip model here. So you end up paying a large premium for some more CPU performance. But it's actually like the base model chip is where all the value is. Like, if you're trying to maximize bang for your buck, that's it. It's the base model M4 or M5. That's it.
So with the M5 iPad Pro, you get up to 2 times faster storage read and write speeds. You get the C1X in the cellular version. You get the N1 for Wi-Fi 7, Bluetooth 6, and Thread, which, John, that is different from the M5 MacBook Pro because that was Wi-Fi 6, right? I can't scroll that quickly.
6E, yeah. The 6E, Macs have been stuck. The Macs have not had Wi-Fi 7, and we're hoping with the M5 generation they would get Wi-Fi 7. Well, maybe they still will, but not the base M5 MacBook Pro. But the M5 iPad Pro does get all the new fancy chips from the iPhone Air. It gets the C1X, it gets the N1. The N1 was used in all the new phones. Why didn't they put the N1 in the M5 MacBook Pro? I don't know, but they didn't.
So you get, like I said, Wi-Fi 7, Bluetooth 6, and Thread. You can drive external displays with this, as you could before, except at up to 120 hertz. Interesting. And additionally, it supports adaptive sync for lower latency. You can fast charge up to 50% in about half an hour with a 40-watt adapter or higher. There are the same sizes and same weights as the M4 models, 11-inch and 13-inch. The nanotexture is a $100 option, and it's only available on the 1 and 2 terabyte models. The storage options, speaking of, are 256, 512, 1 and 2 terabytes. The price starts at $1,000 for Wi-Fi with 256 gigs. Again, pre-order today in stores a week from today as we record this. And so that is the new M5 iPad Pro. John, are you buying one?
No. I mean, like, so I use my iPad. I bought it when they got the OLED screen because I use it as a little TV. This has the same screen, so I have no reason to get this. I'm not an iPad power user, but it's a good iPad if you want. If you didn't buy an M4 OLED one and you want a little TV, this is great. I highly recommend it. And if you want a powerful iPad because you're that kind of person, this one's even better than the M4 one. Didn't change anything else about it. There were some rumors like, oh, they're going to add a second camera. So there's one on the long edge and one on the short edge. They didn't do that. Like, there's... It's this. If you had to characterize this whole set of announcements, like take our existing products that had other chips in them and put in M5s and don't change much else. I'm actually kind of surprised that they swapped in the C1X and the N1, but I guess in a low power device like an iPad, they figured it was worth it. Whereas in the MacBook Pro, they're like, it's the base MacBook Pro and we got a big battery anyway. I don't know what the thing is. It's been a shame that the Macs have been kept out of the Wi-Fi 7 family for so long, and it still seems to continue. I'll be really disappointed if the M5 Pro and Max MacBook Pros that are released next year also don't have Wi-Fi 7.
Yeah, I think the time has come for that, but we'll see. I think this new iPad, it looks it you know, and we'll get to this in the Vision Pro segment in a second, probably, but like it is exactly a speed bump update. You know, again, just like that M5 MacBook Pro. It's a speed bump update and it's to a really good speed. And it's to a product that is already, like, you know, the iPad and the MacBook Pro, like, these are already really great products, really high-end, you know, great performance, like, great everything. If you happen to use this product and need a really nice one, that's a really nice one. The iPad Pro is not something I really use, so I don't have much else to say about it, because they've pushed the hardware and the price so far up that I feel like if you're buying this, you probably really like it a lot and really use it a lot. And neither of those are really the case for me, but it looks like a really good update for people for whom it is the case.
The time has come. The M5 Apple Vision Pro is here. This is the first revision of the Vision Pro since it came out in, what, February of 24? Do I have that right? Something like that. And so we're reading from Apple's newsroom. With M5, Apple Vision Pro renders 10% more pixels on the custom micro OLED displays compared to the previous generation, resulting in a sharper image with crisper text, Marco Arment, and more detailed visuals. Vision Pro can also increase the refresh rate up to 120 hertz for reduced motion blur when users look at their physical surroundings, and an even smoother experience when using Mac Virtual Display. And The Verge writes, the previous maximum refresh rate was 100 hertz. Also, AI-powered features like Persona or spatial photos are up to 50% faster, and the battery life is also improved by about 30 minutes to about 2.5 hours of general use and 3 hours of video playback.
That's nice that you do get a battery life bump in this, because it seems like they basically only changed the SoC. And I guess the M2 is old and this is 3 nanometer and whatever the M2 was, so that kind of makes some sense. But anyway, the bit about rendering 10% more pixels on the screen, the way I interpret that, and Apple hasn't said anything to negate this, is that the screens are the same. Like the hardware, the actual hardware that's in those are exactly the same as they've ever been. But kind of like if you're used to playing video games, there is a difference between the render resolution and the display resolution. So internally, a game, for example, can render the scene at some resolution. But then when it comes time to display it, it may have rendered it at a smaller resolution than your screen, or it may have rendered it at a bigger resolution than your screen, and it will scale it either up or down to fit the display. And my understanding of the statement is that they are going to have a 10% larger, 10% more pixels in their render resolution before they say, okay, now display this on the eye displays. And I'm assuming they're mostly scaling up to the eye displays, because as Marco's pointed out in the past, like they don't have even resolution distribution. Like you have more pixel density in the center. Again, not the hardware, the software-wise. Like when they have the image that they're showing you, the image of the world or the images of your windows floating in the world or whatever, they render it with more detail in the part where you're, first of all, they have foveated rendering, which is like tracks where you're looking and renders in more detail there.
Yeah, but that, honestly, that's kind of what I assumed this was referring to. I thought they were saying, I mean, we don't know yet. I assumed by saying 10% more pixels, I thought maybe they're going to just increase the size of the foveated in focus range a little
bit. Well, that was, it all amounts to the same thing, because if you take the image that they eventually display, it's not like a normal rectangular looking image. It's some weird warp thing that they, you know, put through the lenses and everything. Like, so if you spend more pixels, if you're going to make the foveated rendering area bigger, you'd have to spend more pixels to render more information there before it gets squished down. So that's what I'm assuming they're doing, that their render target, like internally in memory, has 10% more pixels, but then they take that image and squish it down onto the same screen they always had. Now, where those pixels end up, probably they added more in the center. Maybe they added more detail around the edges, so the edges aren't as blurry as they were. I don't know. Maybe when somebody gets one of these and starts to test it, they can figure it out. Either way, 10% is not a lot, so I wouldn't expect miracles from this, like clearer text or whatever. Maybe it's better, but like they didn't change the screens, it seems like. If they had, I feel like they would be touting that. Like, the micro-LED displays are exactly the same as they were on the original Vision Pro, according to everything that Apple has put out today.
That is not at all what I got from this announcement. I assumed it meant that the displays were a little bit bigger, but you're probably right, and I'm probably wrong, to be honest with you. But
yeah,
as soon as someone gets one of these and breaks it up, and we'll find out. Like, if the screens are 10% bigger, that should be pretty obvious with someone with a ruler.
I don't think they would have used the term pixels then. Like, yeah. You know, so that's it seems like they have made a couple of improvements to the displays that I think were actually not rumored at all. Like, you know, the rumors were like, it'll be an M5 update. Okay. No one knew anything about it, really. Oh, and the strap was rumored too. But it seems like, you know, whatever the 10% more pixels is, which I'm pretty sure is the foveated rendering thing, but we'll find out. They're rendering more of that. And I think one of the interesting parts is they said that they are... they're officially saying 120 hertz now, which is the up to level of the screen, which I believe it was not discussed before, but I think it was 90 in the first generation one.
That was 100, we just said.
Oh, right. Sorry, 100.
Previous and maximum then, was 100.
Okay. And then they also said that the pass-through video now runs at a higher refresh rate, which that's been one of the areas that, like, if you ever used a Meta Quest headset and then you use a Vision Pro, you're like, wow, the Meta Quest, like, it's much lower resolution, but the pass-through video is so fast and so smooth, because that's something that's made to be used with the user in constant motion. If you're playing games, you are in constant motion. So the pass-through video experience is very important to be very fast, very low latency. And that's something that the first generation Vision Pro, I always noticed that, like, this is obviously a device made to be used just when the user is stationary, when you are sitting on a couch or something, and the pass-through video was always a little bit smeary and blurry and laggy. It's still, you know, the resolution of it was way better than the Quest series headsets, but the motion was not. So this sounds like they've made a substantial improvement to the pass-through video as well. I am interested to hear about that. Like, whenever we know somebody who has one of these things, I'm definitely not buying one, but whenever we know somebody who has one, I am curious to hear, like, how much better is the pass-through motion than it was before?
Yeah, and the up to is key here. Like, again, the swapping out the M2 to the M5 is more powerful. It's got more powerful everything in it. So to the extent that the M2 was holding it back from maintaining that maximum of 100 hertz, because I think 100 hertz would look smooth, but it's up to, like, that's the maximum. So if things get laggy or whatever, it's going to update at a lower refresh rate. So hopefully not only will this be able to reach a higher peak of 120 instead of 100, but it'll be able to sustain a higher one without taxing the SoC, because again, we've made a lot of progress from the M2 to the M5, so that's reaping the benefits from that.
All right, so it still uses the original R1. It comes with Apple's new 40 to 60 watt dynamic power adapter. It is still on Wi-Fi 6 and Bluetooth 5.3.
Not even 6E, because the Vision Pro had Wi-Fi 6, not 6E, so no change there from the launch version.
Price and storage and RAM are also unchanged. You can pre-order it today, as with the other devices in store on Wednesday, the 22nd. And also, dear Vision Pro, original Vision Pro owners, get fucked. Love Apple, because you cannot trade in your original M2 Vision Pro. Sorry about that. Womp womp, but tough noogies.
I mean, maybe they'll change that, but yeah, that's disappointing, because I bet they'd get a lot of takers. The biggest fans of the thing are like, well, I love this thing, but I'm not going to pay another $3,500. Can I trade this in? Nope.
I don't, I mean, we'll get to the I guess we'll get to the skepticism in a minute. But like, I don't think there's going to be that many people who are rushing to upgrade. I think if you spent $3,500 plus on this thing 2 years ago, I can't imagine that you're like, I've gotten so much value out of that. I definitely want to spend another $3,500 plus on the next one already so soon with not substantially more content or apps than we had 2 years ago. Like that, I think that's going to be a tough sell. Like, I think this does not feel like an update to expand its market for lots of reasons. This feels like an update to keep the product alive for a little while longer while they figure out what to do about it. This is, again, it's a spec bump. It's a nice spec bump. But if you look at all the reasons people would not have bought the first one, they have solved literally zero of them with this update. Like, it's still the same design. It's still
the strap
big,
is better.
Heavy. It's still massively expensive compared to any other VR headset on the market. It still has very little content, very, very few apps, maybe even fewer now than it had back then. Like, it's in a rough spot in terms of, like, who's buying this? I think what they have found is they have a small market for it, probably with, you know, people who are making 3D content or making, you know, making immersive video, making immersive content. You know, so you have like the you know, high end content creators and editors and stuff like that who are using them. You probably have some specialized industrial kind of uses, but like probably not a huge market for that. Like, this is a product that justifies almost no investment from Apple. And so it has gotten almost no investment from Apple. This is literally keeping it alive until they figure out what to do next, which might be not much in this area. But if, you know, for all the reasons that this market is so small, this will address zero of those reasons. This will not expand the market at all. All it does is keep this product from dying for another few years, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, two zeros in there. Solves zeros of the problems and does zero expansion of the market or something. I agree with you on the market expansion, but I feel like the strap with the top thing maybe solves one of the 10,000 problems in the first one.
Wow. Excuse me, sir. It's 3,500 problems. No, I can't. But no, to be clear, we're talking about the dual knit band, which basically imagine the like crank to expand or contract band that goes behind your head. We'll stick another one of those on top of your head. And I think Federico originally found an Etsy person that 3D printed some sort of housing, for lack of a better word, or adapter mount thing where you could get one or a second solo knit band, so the second thing that goes behind your head, and plug it into this
more dollars
for $100 and plug it into this thing, and so you have this $200 plus $50 for the trinket or whatever to mount it on. You have this like $250 Rube Goldberg mount, but allegedly,
which, by the way,
incredibly comfortable.
Yes, I have that, and it's way, like, once I discovered that and put in the bracket was like $30, like $130, 100 to Apple, 30 to the bracket. It does dramatically improve the comfort, but again, like, it fixes none of the other problems. So like, okay, that helps, but if you ask people what are the top three reasons you're not buying this, I don't know that comfort would have made the list for most people. I think it has larger challenges.
That's not why they're not buying it. That's the complaint of people who have bought it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fair.
But again, but it's like, okay, well, suppose you fix the comfort. Now you have, you know, battery life, isolation, and the lack of content to deal with. So like, it's even if you ignore the price, which you shouldn't, but even if you do, again, this is they're keeping it alive. And I think what they're obviously like they're doing like the new live sports thing that they're attempting to get off the ground. The Blackmagic cameras are finally kind of getting out there in the world. You know, they're trickling out. So I think what they're doing is they're seeing that like the foundations for the content ecosystem are very slowly being laid. They're very slowly growing. Over time, there might be a decent amount of immersive video content being produced and being available for it. That time has not yet come, but it is very slowly. It's like, you know, like starting a car in fifth gear. Like, you're very slowly creeping and like getting a little bit faster, a little bit, but there is such a long way to go. And so I think this is them buying time. This is them saying, look, half the company already, like, when the Vision Pro launched, half the company didn't support it. Like, Apple's own apps are barely available for it. Most of them are still iPad apps. Apple has put in not that much work, but they put in a little bit. And they don't want this whole segment of the of their product line to die. They don't want all this work to be for nothing. Tim Cook, as we know, is obsessed with AR and sees this as a path to get there, even though I don't think it is. I think those are separate things with separate needs. Anyway, we'll another time. So, they, you know, there are some people who believe heavily in this, but also it sells nothing. So it is not worth a whole bunch of investment from the company in both, you know, hardware engineering or in software support, honestly. And so that's what we're seeing. We're seeing Apple is very slowly kind of trickling things out for it and waiting for that content ecosystem to eventually develop. They're, I don't think, doing a whole lot to help it. They're certainly not doing as much as they could to help it, but they're waiting for that to develop, and they really believe it will. So in the meantime, they're like, we just have to keep this product going because without this product, it will not develop. So we're going to keep this product existing, but it's mostly going to be bought by people who are in the business of making content for it, not watching content on it and not using apps for it and everything else. And we'll see, you know, over time if they if it ever becomes worth launching another one. Again, I wouldn't consider that a guarantee. This could be the last Apple Vision product that's ever made. We don't know yet. And I don't know if they know yet, to be honest. But what they did was keep this product the same and just, you know, hit refresh and just update the year 2025, and we'll see whatever happens. I don't think we're going to hear any more about it after this hardware update than we have been hearing about it. I think it's going to continue to be this kind of baseline level product that is occasionally the butt of jokes, but then most people just don't think about it all most of the time. And it will very, very slowly accumulate more content, and maybe someday that will be enough. I still don't think they're doing enough to help and support that. But hey, here it is. Here's another one that's the same as the first one.
I think the most important role this product has is to stop people from buying the M2-based one. Because even if, like, if you're going to continue to
I don't
have this
think
product,
that was really, you know, they're not like holding the door back on that one.
I know, but like every, like, over as the years progress, every one of those M2 that gets out there just make, like, as you pointed out, just kind of makes it harder for the ecosystem to ever take off because people are buying just ancient hardware and you're like, oh, if only I could do this thing. You have to start, even though, like, the ecosystem doesn't warrant it really, you do have to get some, you start to have to get some hardware turnover in there. Even if it's only like people break their old one and when they go to buy a new one, like, they shouldn't buy an M2, like, it shouldn't be 2030 and they're buying an M2-based product, right, for $3,500, right? So that's what I feel like is important. If obviously they've continued, they're deciding they're going to continue this product line, right? That's the decision they've made. You have to put out something that doesn't have an M2 in it because, I mean, when this came out, the M2 was already not the latest chip or was on the verge of not being the latest chip, right?
I think it was on the verge.
Yeah, it was. I think it had already been replaced in like the MacBook Air or something, and then but not everything else yet.
Anyway, it's important to just keep that turnover, and it is nice you get a couple of little boosts. And like to show, like when you have an M5 in there, it's like, oh, we can do some fairly minor tweaks to the software that actually, like now that we have an M5, we can do 120 hertz. Maybe the minimum frame rate will be higher. Maybe we, you know, it takes less time to do those persona things. So stuff that was clunky before, oh, and we get a free half an hour battery life in a thing that has crappy battery life. So now it's slightly less crappy, right? You know, it's fine. And as for the band thing, like I'd have never tried this band like this. Marco, you said the Etsy one that you got is comfortable.
It's great.
But looking at this, I do wonder like how much of an improvement it's going to be because the thing didn't get any lighter and it just has one dial. Like obviously when you have the two of them, you have two dials because you have two complete solo things. This, I think it just has one dial. Like
correct.
Is it just one dial?
So we don't actually know like, you know, is a top one fixed? Does it tighten both at the same time?
Yeah. Or is there another
different
dial
ratios?
On the other side?
You know, who knows?
Maybe the right side does top and the left side does back. I don't know.
They did say, though, that you don't have to actually buy the new Vision Pro to get this. This strap will be sold separately, and it works on the first one, too.
Yeah, and it's $99, so it's half the price of buying two solo knit bands and an Etsy thing.
Yeah, but I mean, the Etsy thing with the two knit bands, as compared to the original solo band, it's, you know, it's a totally different way of supporting it because it uses the top of your head, not just the back. And as compared to like the Apple top and back Velcro strap thing they made, it's way cushier and way more supportive and way easier to adjust quickly. So it's great. Like, you know, before I had the dual solenoid thing for mine, whenever I would be like showing it off to people, I would swap on the solo knit because it was easier to adjust quickly. This, you know, you don't want to like be doing with the, you know, the Velcro big strap on with somebody like, oh, you pinched their hair. Hold on, undo it. Like, it's very inelegant when you're trying to show the Vision Pro to somebody else, which was the main activity you did when you first bought a Vision Pro. But then the, you know, when I was, as soon as I got this, you know, my hack to do the dual strap, I kept that on forever after that and never changed it out. And it was far better for both my own use and for showing it to other people and passing it around to other people. So I think this band's going to be a big hit, but it's a big hit to a very, very small market. So great. Look, it's like the Mac Pro getting new wheels. It's like someone's going to use those. Like, not a ton of people, but for the people who do use it, it helps. And that's this band. If you are a regular Vision Pro user and you are not yet using one of the, you know, Etsy dual solo band hacks, I would strongly recommend checking out this band.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to at some point give it a shot some way, somehow. I am using the Belkin strap that you use the fancy Apple one in the back, and then there's like this Velcro thing in the top, and that's pretty good. But the problem with that is that you can't use the developer strap with it for complicated reasons, or verbally complicated reasons to describe. And although I don't use the developer strap that often, there have been occasions where I've wanted to use it because I'm doing Vision Pro development, or because I'm doing the Mac Virtual Display in a environment that does not have stellar Wi-Fi. And this, from what I can tell, should work with the developer strap, which is also a big improvement. Additionally, a couple of more accessories. Apple will start selling the PlayStation VR 2 Sense controller on November 11th for $250. And additionally, the Logitech Muse Spatial Stylus, which is basically you can draw in thin air, so to speak, that's $130. And I believe that's available now. I think something like that. Yes, it looks like it is.
Cool.
All right. Hello, Future Marco. It is an hour and a half in. I don't think we necessarily need to stop now, but I wanted to give everyone the option. So what do we
think? Well, we got to do the Apple TV thing. We talked about it already.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I just wanted to make sure.
No, we should do the Apple TV thing.
No worries. Yeah. Just wanted to ask before I plow ahead. So that works for me. Who is clicking incessantly
that's
in the background?
I'm trying to do something over here. This Marco was, I'm not talking during this time. Marco, let it out.
All
I'm
right,
not talking
about
them, except for right now when I'm talking.
Right, exactly. All right. Goodbye, Future Marco. So we do have an additional bit of somewhat breaking news from a couple of days ago. Apple announced that F1 the movie is making its streaming debut on December 12th. And let me do a quick aside. I know we already talked about the F1 movie. I watched it again recently, and I got to tell you, it is a deeply unserious movie from the perspective of an F1 fan, but it's also super fun. So I definitely recommend, once it lands in Apple TV Plus, which we're about to talk about, once it lands in Apple TV Plus, then you should give it a shot. I think there are much worse ways to spend a couple hours of your time. Anyways, reading from Mac Rumors, buried in its announcement about F1 the movie making its streaming debut on December 12th, Apple has also announced that Apple TV Plus is now being rebranded as simply Apple TV. A single line near the end of the press release states, quote, Apple TV Plus is now simply Apple TV with a vibrant new identity. Apple's blurb about the streaming service at the bottom of the press release also reflects the updated naming. Quote, Apple TV is available on the Apple TV app in over 100 countries and regions on over 1 billion screens, including iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, Apple Vision Pro, Mac, and popular smart TVs. This, of course, everyone made the same joke concurrently. You can watch Apple TV on your Apple TV using the Apple TV app. So you can do Apple TV on Apple TV on Apple TV, which is hilarious. But the more I thought about it, my first reaction was, are you kidding me? But the more I thought about it, the more I think, honestly, this is probably for the best.
Yeah, I think it makes sense that the TV service named Apple TV would be in an app named Apple TV. That's how streaming services work. HBO is available in an app called HBO. You know, Netflix is available in an app called Netflix. Like, so that part makes sense. I think it is only the longtime existence of the Apple TV box that makes it especially weird.
But no, what about the TV app? The Netflix app just shows you Netflix. But the Apple TV app doesn't just show you Apple streaming.
That's true. Yeah, I guess that part
is. It is the button on the remote by default takes you there. It is like the hub of their TV watching experience that other things plug into. So already, even before you consider the hardware box, there's still some confusion. Also, by the way, that Apple TV app is just called TV. Like in the icon, like it has the Apple logo, so it's an Apple logo TV, but like we refer to it as the Apple TV app, but we also say the TV app a lot of the time, right? And anyway, before we get to the hardware, just talking about the Apple TV Plus name, as we'll see, Eddie Q is going to read some quotes from him from a podcast pretty soon, talking about the renaming and people saying, well, it makes sense, blah, blah, blah. That's what people called that anyway. Here's the problem. I think at least half the people that I know that regularly misname the Apple TV Plus service call it, drumroll please, Apple Plus.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair. No, that's fair. You're right.
And I don't blame them. I don't blame people for getting it wrong. It's confusing. Some people call it Apple TV. Some people call it Apple Plus. As of yesterday or whenever, neither of those was right. They've only helped half of those people.
Yeah, I have never heard a non-Apple nerd correctly name the Apple TV Plus service ever.
No.
They've said everything like you said, and I mean, granted, a lot of times this doesn't matter. Like, you know, I've also very rarely heard anybody say Apple Watch. Everyone says iWatch still.
Really, I don't hear.
Oh my god, I hear iWatch so much from regular people. Like it's ridiculous. But maybe that's just a Long Island thing. I don't know. But anyway, no one ever calls it Apple TV Plus except nerds like us. So I do think it makes sense overall to call it Apple TV. However, I do have a terrible idea. This is what I was teasing earlier. It's not a very good idea. It's a terrible idea. Most of my ideas are terrible, and this is right along with them.
I've heard a terrible idea on the internet. Should I say my terrible idea I've heard on the internet first, or do you want me to just wait until after?
In case it's the same, I want to still think I came up with this.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Apple TV is the service. The app also makes sense because it's Apple TV for the most part. But what has more things than the Apple TV and Apple TV app? The box. So I think they should rename the box Apple TV Plus.
That's a terrible idea.
That is worse than the idea that I was thinking of. Congratulations.
That is a truly terrible idea.
My word.
Because that makes sense. The box
terrible is
the Apple TV app. Plus a bunch of other stuff.
Well, so is the app, though, unfortunately, as previously noted. No, the Apple TV app is also
concept.
Apple TV plus other stuff. So the app should be, everything should be called plus except for the service.
Because, okay, look, and the app, right now, the box, you know, they had like Apple TV HD and 4K, but, you know, it's 2025. Next time they update the box, just calling it Apple TV 4K is a little bit, you know, that's like Gateway 2000 still being called Gateway 2000 in 2005, yeah. Which it wasn't for that reason. They should rename the box from Apple TV 4K to something else. Apple TV Plus. There it is. It's sitting right now. It's unused.
Do you want to hear the idea that I was thinking of that is not as bad as yours, but it's still terrible?
I would like to hear it.
I'm sure you both already have. People saying that it should be named HomePod something. The hardware box should be called like HomePod TV, or like they basically need to latch onto the HomePod branding
video
for the hardware. Yeah, because like whatever, because the hardware things they put in your house that like don't have screens and stuff are HomePods, and why is this one not called the HomePod? And I think it's a terrible idea because A, HomePods have a bad reputation, and B, it's not a HomePod. I guess I don't know. Like they can do whatever they want with the names of their product, but it doesn't make much sense to me. But no, Apple TV Plus is worse. No,
I was thinking. I mean, another name they might give it is Apple Home, maybe like the next box. Could be Apple.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
but
I mean,
they
don't want to give up all that brand equity of the HomePod, right?
Apple TV Max. Oh, no, I think HBO might have a problem with that.
Yeah, there was the jokes about the device being renamed with Max. And
So far, Apple TV Plus is not as bad as these other ideas that I'm hearing.
No, Plus Apple TV Plus is worse. Yeah, so read from Eddie's interview. I think he explains why.
All right, so Eddie Q was on the Town podcast, and at around 5.5 minutes or thereabouts, Matt Baloney, who's the host, says, how many management consultants did it take to tell you to drop the Plus from Apple TV Plus? Which, credit to Matt Baloney, because that's a very good assumption. However, Eddie said zero. Matt said, you just decided? Eddie said, I just decided. We just decided. Look, we put the plus in there because we've used it in our other services like iCloud Plus, News Plus. But we do that when we have a free service and then there's a paid version. We stayed consistent because of it. But we all called it Apple TV and we said, given where we are today, it's a great time to do it. So let's just do it. Matt then replies, I remember when you announced it, Disney was annoyed, remember, because they had they had Disney Plus coming. Eddie says, I do. Matt says, now, I guess maybe they'll be happier. Maybe when you own them someday, you can bring it back.
Oh, wow.
You now have this potential confusion, though, with other hardware, to which Eddie replies, our hardware is called Apple TV 4K for your TV. I think that's fine, and the app is called Apple TV. It's been called Apple TV on our third-party products as well. So I don't think that'll be a problem at all.
Yeah, so this is the pitch for the Plus. I don't remember the history of Plus, like who did it first or whatever. At least the timeline in this interview is explaining that Disney Plus was coming. But there was a trend of putting a plus symbol at the end of some brand name to say, this is a streaming service that you pay for or whatever. And you had things like Peacock that didn't do that, but the plus stuck on the end was common. And Apple had its own iCloud Plus, News Plus. Again, I don't remember who was first, but I think Apple was pretty early in the sticking plus on the end of things to say it's a thing that you pay for.
Apple TV math.
Yeah. So with the plus symbol on things that you pay for, Eddie's logic is say, well, we have this consistency, but it wasn't actually that consistent because like we only put plus on things that you used to get for free. Now, I know iCloud, there was a free version, and then iCloud Plus was a pay, because you get some measly amount of storage for free, blah, 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 and you get a plus and you pay. That's true. Was there a free version of News? Is there a free version of News?
I don't think so.
I think there is. I think you just don't have access to as much stuff.
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, with the Apple TV Plus, he's like, well, there was never a free version of that. So when Apple comes out with the not inevitable, but many people think is inevitable, ad-supported free version of Apple TV, do they put the plus back on then?
I did see that theory floated that this is just like preparing for a future day where there's a paid version that they call Apple TV Plus again, and then
that would just be a nightmare for them to put the plus back on.
So on one hand, if you look around the streaming service business, every other streaming service has realized that you can make more total money having a free tier with ads than only having a paid service. But I don't necessarily think it's a given that Apple will go that way.
Yeah, if anyone's going to hold off from it, it would be Apple.
Yeah, number one, like Apple is really good at making people pay for stuff, and they have higher end customers who are more.
And they're really bad at
stuff.
Selling ads.
Number two, they suck at selling ads. Like anything Apple does that is ad supported, including News Plus, to some degree, like it's really half butted.
Yeah, and the ads in News Plus are grim.
Yeah, and to actually sell the inventory of a popular free streaming service, you need a pretty good ad sales business. That's not something that you can just like, you know, quickly outsource or quickly whip something together. Like that's a lot of inventory of reasonably well-paying ads. To sell that, they would need a substantial sales arm. Like if you look at like, you know, what the business people all said, like when Netflix was investing in their ad tier, it was a big operation to get that going. It takes a lot of, you know, hiring and build out and, you know, talent and relationship building to be able to sell that many ads. I don't think Apple has it in them, to be honest. Like that's so outside of their usual comfort zone and abilities. I don't necessarily think they're
going
to go
that
way.
It's outside their technology in that they don't collect all the data that advertisers would want to precisely target ads because Apple literally doesn't collect that stuff collects it in a way.
When it comes to Apple selling their own ads, they're happy to do that.
Selling it out to third parties. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, Apple would not shy away from using all of your personal information to target ads to you. They would absolutely do that if they were going all in. But
I think they would shy away from that. Like in terms of like what the other companies do, which is like detecting what you're viewing by reading the screen, like the Vizio TVs and, or whatever that company was doing. Like it's so commonplace now that like not only through every app and everything that goes through Apple software, but also even when you're not going through Apple software, because you're using the Apple TV streaming app or whatever, we can detect what's on your screen and figure out what it is and do all this like super creepy stuff that Apple just doesn't do and I don't think would do. And it makes them less able to sell ads because they don't have as granular and invasive data to sell against.
They have good data. I mean, you know, look at App Store ads. App Store search ads, it's probably, if I had to guess, that might be Apple's largest ad platform. And it's, you know, they do a lot of volume because you have to. It's not a very good system. It's not very advanced. They have not put a ton of effort into it. And it is not nearly as targeted as, you know, something like buying Facebook ads. But
there's
it,
no prescription drug ads in the App Store search ads.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of crap in there, though.
I know. It's like, it's not like News Plus with boner pills or whatever.
Right. But
like,
but you know, but I do think, like, when Apple, if you look at search ads, like they do use your data to try to influence those, to try to rank them. Like they, and you know, they ask you sometimes occasionally in a weird way, but they do use it. Like they are happy to use first party data about what apps you search for, what apps you use, you know. And if it came to it, if they actually decided to do a large ad play in TV, they would be happy to do the same thing. They don't need to, you know, read your screen to know what you're watching. They know what you're watching already because it's their app playing.
To give another example, would they go through everything, every purchase you made with your Apple card?
Maybe, I don't think so. Only because I don't think they would be able to get their technical act together to actually do that.
It's a question of whether it's technical competence or refusal to gather data. But like the granularity of data that other companies are willing to gather from all sources they can possibly get to target ads precisely, like someone who just looked at a web page that had this thing on it and has this history of buying things at Amazon and has this credit score, and just like they'll go much farther than Apple can, as your, to your point, with technical capability. But I think they'll also go farther than Apple will. But anyway, we'll see if they ever make an ad-free version of this. But if I had to make a pitch for why, if I was ADQ in this interview and said, explain to me why the heck you did this renaming thing, here's what would have been my pitch. Apple TV, the streaming service, is the thing with the most sort of brand value in this stew of stuff. Apple TV shows and movies, like movies win Oscars, the shows win Emmys. If there's anything that the public has any consciousness of any of Apple's TV crap, it's because of like Ted Lasso or, you know, like it's the streaming service and the content made for it has the widest awareness in the people in the world. They don't have to be Apple fans. They don't have to have any Apple hardware or any Apple software. It's just they bought a TV. It came with an app and had an Apple logo on it. Someone said, watch Ted Lasso. You said, what's that? They go to the Apple thing. They went to the Apple thing. They watched Ted Lasso, right? That is your sort of brand crown jewel. So give that one the name that is closest to what people are saying. Some people are saying, we used to say Apple Plus because you're stupid past naming bad decisions, but other people said Apple TV. Maybe it's the majority of the people, so we're going to call it Apple TV. The hardware, effectively nobody buys that. Like compared to the number of people who watch Ted Lasso versus the number of people who buy Apple TV pucks. So few people buy it, it doesn't matter what it's called. But calling the hardware essentially the same as your streaming service, it's fine. Because it's like, oh, if you're buying this, you probably know what Apple TV is, like the streaming service. And this is the hardware thing. There's a streaming service called Apple TV. And this is like, it's like a Netflix box. You know, you could buy a Netflix box and watch Netflix on it. Why would you do that? It comes with my TV. Exactly. That's why nobody buys these things. But calling the hardware Apple TV, I think also makes sense, especially in a world where Apple does not actually make a television set, which would confuse things further. And I know there was rumors all those years ago, and that's what the HomePod project came out of. But right now, they don't make one. So calling the hardware thing Apple TV is also fine. Then you have the app. And honestly, I don't know how many people outside tech circles who would ever call that app Apple TV. They may call it the Apple TV app, or they may say just go to TV, or they may say go to Apple TV, but no one knows or cares what the names of those apps are because they're just icons on your screen. And so who cares what that one's called? Honestly, I don't know if it actually is called Apple TV. I know the icon is an Apple logo and the lowercase letters TV. Under the covers, what is that dot app called? Who the hell knows? Who cares? Like, it's not a thing that comes up in the interface, right? And so I think, actually, that's why this renaming is fine. We gave the simple name to the thing that everybody knows. The hardware doesn't matter, but it makes sense for it to match the simple name that everybody knows, and nobody knows or cares what the app is called. So done, and it's mostly just a curiosity to tech nerds. And hopefully, they'll never need to do this again. Don't bring back the Plus. Don't go HBO Max, Max, like, just... Let it fly. Apple TV, and, you know, I'm not saying they should get rid of the TV box, because I like it, and I hope they never stop making it, because the other boxes out there are worse. But just keep making it for the few people who like it, and everyone else will just buy a TV and find the icon that looks like this picture here, and click on it and watch Apple TV, which is the only thing they know about.
Sorted. And then with regard to the vibrant new identity, apparently there's, what did they say on, I think it was Upgrade, there's some smeared gradients on there, and we'll put a link to Six Colors where there's a photo of the new icon. That's all we've seen as we record this. Presumably there'll be more in the future.
It's rainbow.
Yeah, like it's still a black rectangle with a white Apple logo and the white letter, lowercase letters TV, but now the white Apple logo and the white lowercase letters TV have some Siri-looking kind of rainbowy tinge to them.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, fine.
It looks nice.
I don't know what it says representing. Was the previous one only black and white, and now they have color video? Like,
oh, wow.
I don't know. It's all right, fine.
Now in Technicolor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe someday Apple's political activities will line up with their rainbow branding.
Ooh, sick burn. All right. Do we have time for Ask ATP?
No.
Okay, good talk. Then it is up to you to take us home.
All right, one moment. Digging up tabs. All right, got that one, got that one. Okay. All right, thanks to our sponsors this week, Sentry and Grammarly, and thanks to our members who support us directly. You can join us at atp.fm/join. One of the many perks of membership is ATP Overtime, our weekly bonus topic. This week on Overtime, we're going to be talking about Alexa Plus and how it is finally hitting the real world and what people think about it and how it works. So you can join to listen, atp.fm/join. Thank you so much to everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. So, John, you apparently have been on a quest. Tell me about this.
I have. Well, it's not much of a quest. It's just we thought we were all done with phone setup when we said that. We all got our new phones. We talked about them, all that stuff, and I noted that I was getting new phones for my children, but they're away at college, so their new phones were just sitting on the desk. And so I hadn't set up their phones. And so I had a phone. I had a phone setup process waiting for me. You figure, haven't we already talked everything there is? Haven't we said everything there is to say about the setup process last time we talked about it? Apparently not, because I mean, or maybe it's just amnesia. Because I know, as I noted, every time I have to set up a phone, which is I have to set up a phone every year. I only buy new phones for myself once every other year, but every year someone's getting a new phone because my wife and I alternate years, and the kids get phones occasionally or whatever. And I always just forget all of the things that I should remember and the things that I should avoid or whatever. Because it just doesn't happen enough to stick in my mind, and usually because I'm so angry about it, because I have to end up getting an iPhone day, and I end up calling Verizon, and it's just blah, blah, blah. Anyway, here's to remind myself maybe next year to not make these same mistakes. So, first, when I'm setting up a phone for my kid, like first kid came home from school, and setting up their phone, and you know, I tell them, as you know, you'll be without your phone for about 4 hours, but you'll get it back, and it's not really going to be 4 hours, but you want to, yeah. Set expectations so they're not annoyed about it. And they say, no, I don't have 4 hours. Not fine. Just tell me when you can be without your phone for 4 hours. Give me your phone, and I'll do the setup. Because
never
need the other phone there, because I'm doing like device-to-device transfer. See previous episodes about the different techniques. When I'm doing this, there's usually a step where it's like, oh, do Face ID setup. And I believe you can skip it. You can say, oh, I don't want to do this now. I'll do it later. But I don't want to skip it because I just want to get it over with and get it done and be able to hand off the phone to them. And especially if I know where the kid is now, I can say, oh, here, just do the Face ID thing. And my kids know how to do the Face ID thing. They're Apple kids. They've had Apple hardware before. So I have to give the phone to them for them to do Face ID. And this year, I'm sure I've done this before and I did it again. It's like going through the setup, blah, 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 blah. Oh, Face ID. Oh, I walk into the other room, give it to my daughter. I say, hey, do the Face ID thing. Guess what? Now I walk too far away from the other phone. Because I left the other phone table, and now I've gone too far away, and the setup process aborts. Because it's like, nope, lost connection to the other phone, which can never be regained because we don't have that technology, because you walk 2 feet too far away from the other phone. I'm like, okay, well, that sucks. I should have remembered that. I know that happens. Just, all right, start the setup over. Now I'm going through the setup. This time on the Face ID setup, I go over there with both phones, do the Face ID, you know, making sure they're staying near each other. I come back. Eventually, I get to the point where it's like, time to set up Siri. And I'm like, haha, I'm not going to make the mistake again. I'm going to get up and, you know, because it's like, I think it wants you to say stuff like, hey, dingus, what's the weather or whatever. Like, and again, I think there's a skip, but I'm always like, is this trying to remember my voice? I don't want to do it because I don't want to remember my voice for my daughter's phone because our voices don't sound the same, right? So I bring the two phones over to my daughter and say, here, just do what it says on the screen. Say, you know, what's the weather, blah, 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 right? And I bring the other phone because I don't want the process to abort. But when she's doing it, she says, hey, dingus, what's the weather? The other phone is nearby. and it answers and activates. And it's like, and she's going through the tutorial, but her other phone, her old phone, is answering it. And by answering it and going through that process, it aborts the setup because now it's too far into the Siri like thing or whatever. And not only does it abort the setup process, now it requires erasing the new phone and starting completely over. No choice. It's like, sorry, setup has been aborted because essentially the old phone got out of that little screen where it shows that white card at the bottom. And it says, you know, finish on other phone or whatever. You're like, God, don't touch it. Don't touch anything on the old phone. Siri came and was answering those queries and aborted the whole setup process. And the only way forward was erase the new phone, start completely over again. And erasing a phone takes a while, even though we hadn't done everything yet. So that's two strikes. And the third strike, third time, and now I know, like, you know, I'm going to have to, like, muffle the other phone but keep it nearby. I think I skipped the Siri setup process, which is the smarter thing to do. Anytime you can skip those, that's what I'm learning and want to remind myself. During the setup, when you're doing a thing, skip everything until you get through all the hurdles and then do them. Because if anything perturbs this process, you have to start over. And then finally, during some later part of the setup process, since my kids have stuff on their phones from the days before they had Apple IDs, the days before there was an Apple family, they have purchases made under my Apple ID because we used to have all the quote unquote family purchases were made under my Apple ID in the days before there was the concept of an Apple family. So during the setup, it will ask you, please sign in with this Apple ID to unlock the applications. It knows that there are apps on there that were purchased through my Apple ID. And so I have to log into my Apple ID on her phone. I enter in my information, and it says we sent a code to your trusted device. And, you know, the thing that comes up that shows a little map that says, like, there's a login from this place on the map, but do you want to allow it or whatever? And I say, this is showing up on my phone right now, or that's my trusted device, is my actual phone. So I'm logging in my daughter's phone. It sent the code to my phone. I hit allow on the little map thing, and then it pops up the thing with the six digits that it wants you to type in on my daughter's phone, and that six-digit thing disappears instantly.
Oh, cool.
And it stays on screen long enough.
Oh, I've seen this.
Yeah, it stays on screen long enough that you're like, I did see the six numbers. I can probably memorize them in the time they come up. And so you do send code again. All right, ready? Here's the map. I'm going to hit the allow button. Allow, memorize. Oh, no, I got five of them. It's like this bug has been in Apple's platforms for, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years? It's so maddening because if it didn't work at all, you'd be like, oh, I'll find some other things. There's other things like try another way, send me an SMS, blah, blah, blah. Like you can eventually get through it, but it almost works and it stays on screen just long enough to make you think you can do it. And this is my message to me for next year. Don't try to memorize the six numbers. Just immediately do choose another way, send an SMS, type in a phone number, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not inexperienced at setting up iPhones. I've set up a lot of iPhones, and still, this is my experience. And I had just set up my wife's phone like 2 weeks ago, and still, I can't get through. The good thing is, I will say, both of their phone numbers transferred successfully, because it was an iPhone day! Yay! Oh, and also, I deleted their, like, one global eSIM. You know, like I knew that those were going to screw it up. So I remembered that part. I deleted off any weird, you know, foreign country eSIMs. And then because it was an iPhone day, I was like, it's literally the first time I've ever seen this happen on an iPhone. Was the number transferred correctly on two phones. So victory for me.
I've had an issue in the past, I'm sure, but it's been years since I've had an issue doing the phone number transfer. So I don't know what makes your account so special that you.
It's not the account. I think Verizon servers just suck. Like, because, you know, everyone has AT&T has iPhone Day as well, right? But whatever their servers are in this area that answer these API calls for, like, whatever, you know, transfer the number from here to there, they just give up the ghost. And I was already, because I remembered from our last episode, I was really like, if this transfer fails, I remember, I can supposedly go to the website and do this myself without calling them. So I'm going to try that next. But I didn't have to, because it actually worked the way it's supposed to. The number is just transferred.
One of these days, one of us, and maybe it'll be me, we should just try an iCloud restore. And I know it used to be this.
Marco does it.
I do it every time.
Yeah. Oh, okay, there you go. So, and it remembers, like, Wi-Fi passwords and stuff?
Yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah, it's not as high a fidelity as the...
keychain. Yeah. Anything except your Slack login, basically.
From that follow-up we had from the AppleCare person, I think he still said the device-to-device and Finder backup are still higher fidelity than iCloud, but he didn't specify about what. But most of the stuff is in iCloud backup at this point.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we should just do that, and maybe it would be easier. I don't know. I should try it at some point, but I'll forget this by the time next year rolls around.
Well, I mean, just don't do it when you're away from home on a trip in a car.
All right.
A long way to go before you're optimizing at that level.
No, fair enough. Titles. Where is my tab?
By the way, part of my clicking before was to figure out whether October 29th, 2013 was a Wednesday, and it wasn't. It was a Tuesday, so... Two data points for neutral recordings. I found one neutral recording that was on Wednesday and one neutral recording that was on a Tuesday. It doesn't prove anything because we record on all the times. I'm just saying I wanted to have more than one data point.
John, open a terminal window.
I know. Use the cal command. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I know about the cal command, okay? I just foolishly thought, this would just be easier to do in the GUI, and I was wrong.
You were wrong. What day did you say it was? October what?
Let me look at it again. 2013, 10/29.
That's Declan's birthday. Why would I have recorded on Declan's birthday?
I don't know. I'm saying what the file date is.
that's a Tuesday. But I don't know why. I guess at that point, it was... Oh, no. He was long asleep. He was... Oh, no. That's 2013. He wasn't even a thing. It was a year
before Declan's birthday. Before he's born. By the way, the date on the file is 11 p.m., so he would probably be asleep if he was alive, but he didn't exist, so...
Do you remember we used to start at... What was
nine.
It? Nine?
We started at nine.
Yeah, nine was our original time. Back when we were young men.
Will you permit me to explain why that was, or will you fight me on that too?
I don't know. What's your excuse?
I believe it was after at least my kid was in bed.
Yes, it was getting the children into bed.
Yeah.
Thank you. At least we agree on that. Why did you record a nine? I don't know. It's just because we did neutral nine and we never changed it. There was
no
reason.
That is true. That part is also true.
I know, but the reason we did neutral at nine was to get the kids into bed. The bedtime procedure. Like, when can we be sure that kids will actually be down? Not that we expect the kids to go to bed at 9 p.m. It's just like worst case scenario. What if it's one of those nights where it's a challenge and the kids don't go down? I forget what my kids' bedtimes were. There was probably like 7, 7:30, depending on what their ages were. But 9 felt like it was safe, where like the battle should be over by then.
All right, titles. Let's see. We all declare victory is good. ATP merch gets you jobs.
Singular.
Let's see. Hair splitting semantics is pretty good. Although these are all from our discussion earlier.
I liked when John said intimate and regimented, which was not at all about anything.
What was that about?
Yeah, what
it was
that
about the chip design and scaling up using the other.
Yeah. Well, that's, I don't remember. Yeah, that's because, like, if you look at them, they're like laying on top of each other. So it's like, now I can mix and match CPU and GPU. Well, don't, like, when they lay on top of each other, they have to connect in all sorts of ways. And
it's getting even more saucy. Mm,
yeah, it just doesn't seem like
sounds
it's
intimate
them...
and regimented.
Yeah, I
like
think
a that's, German
that,
lover.
That's the...
where is that? I don't even see it in here.
It's at the top. It's
intimate
five.
And regimented.
It's six now.
I'm fine
that's
with that.
The winner. That's the winner. Got to do it. All right, we got to vamp for a minute while I do this. Oh, don't need the leading right. doodad. Hold on, let me just make sure I got all this. Blah, 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 blah. All right, should be good in 1 second. All right, next week we are still on Wednesday, I believe. We should probably look at Thanksgiving since that's approaching.
We don't need to do that scheduling now. But
yeah, I know, I'm just saying. Oh, and also Declan's birthday, but I guess he'll be asleep at that point, so it should be fine. Good. All right. Then we'll see you on the 22nd. Bye, live people.
Cool. Bye, live people.